I will fight you. Welcome back to The Streets Will Remember. I am your favorite host, Hanny.
I'm Justin.
How are you, Justin?
I'm having a morning, man. It's a rough one. Kadeen and I are cat sitting. So I'm recording from the place that I'm cat sitting at. And so my phone rings right as I'm setting up, and I figure it's Kadeen calling me. And the only reason I can think that she's calling me is that she doesn't have her keys. But as she calls me, my phone turns off and I don't have a charger with me. So it's just like two blocks away. So I'm like, okay, she'll probably be out on the street. I run downstairs. I run around the block. I run all the way home. I don't see her anywhere. So I'm thinking, where can she be? So rather than like run around the streets looking for her, I say, okay, I'll run upstairs and just get like a power bank. And at least that way I can head back and then call her and let her know, like, come by and pick up the keys. And I open the front door and she's there washing dishes. And I'm like, what? Like, why did you call me then? I thought you were locked out. And she goes, oh, I just wanted to tell you to make sure to test the sound for your podcast because you're in a new space where there might be an echo.
Well, look, I didn't want to have to tell you this, but it is unacceptable that you were late to our podcasting session. Secondly, for anyone that knows Justin, just the image of him cat sitting is the most beautiful thing I can ever imagine, because you're like definitely not a cat person. Definitely. At least you don't look like it.
I like dogs, but I don't think I'm at the point in my life where I really want to have any additional responsibility, be it cats, dogs, children, other,
just anything else. Well, look, it's nice to be talking to you again. I'm very excited for today's episode.
Well, I think it's particularly big news because Leeds is going to be in the Premier League next season.
This is amazing news. It's incredible news because for anyone that has followed Marcelo Bielsa's career, nothing new in terms of his ability to do what he's done, but it's going to be really exciting to see him lock horns with Guardiola, Mourinho, Arteta. I think just the conversations these guys will have against each other is going to be just so much fun to listen to. All these football minds just engaging together. It's going to be so exciting.
We record a couple of weeks in advance because we take our time to...
But I am excited to be also in the Premier League.
Yeah, I just hope that he stays on because, I mean, it seems like he's happy in Leeds, but, you know, I mean, he's got a history of walking when he feels the conditions aren't right.
I was going to say, it'd be a very Bielsa thing to step away now.
I don't think it's necessarily he steps away when it's at a high. Throughout his career, he stepped away when he felt the working conditions weren't right. But yeah, I mean, before we get into that, and this is interesting because he's somebody whose legacy is still being written. But in terms of memories up until now, what are some of your best and earliest memories of Bielsa? When were you introduced to him? Let's start with that.
My introduction to Bielsa would have been in the 2002 World Cup when he was managing Argentina. That was definitely the first time I came across with him. And then the most engagement I had with him as a coach would be during his time managing Chile. Then there were, like, you know, little spurts here and there where he was managing, you know, Atletico Bilbao and obviously now Leeds, obviously with the strength of the Premier League and the championship globally and the reach that it has, you know, obviously seen more of Bielsa in the past 2 years than I have in the last decade. But those were certainly my biggest memories of him, was him managing Argentina, him managing Chile, and I guess the stories that revolve around those particular times and the effects that he had on those teams as well. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't have a clear memory of him in 2002. And it was actually, I think, at that time in my life, I was, I think, 15 in 2002, and I wasn't super interested in coaching or managers or tactics or anything of that nature, really. You know, though Argentina had a really incredible team and was expected to do big things, I don't think I realized till later on that Bielsa was the manager there. I think when he first really came to my attention is, like you said, was when he was coaching Chile. You know, that young Chile team when, you know, the Alexis Sanchez, Arturo Vidal generation, where they were all kind of 20 to 23, 24 years old, they were just so fun to watch. And it was so rare to see a national team that could move that fluidly and interchangeably. And so I started to, you know, look into more his philosophy, you know, as his career progressed and he took on some clubs in Europe and elsewhere. just his philosophy, his value system and everything, he just grew to be a fascinating character. And again, you know, oftentimes when you talk about football or you tell people that you're interested in football, especially for people who are not interested in football, they kind of turn off. And the truth is that for me, football is a vessel to see the world. So it's a great way to study like sociological concepts. It's a great way to study anthropology. It's a great way to see cultures. Also just to depict life. And I think Bielsa is one of those characters. And if you read about his upbringing, his background, his philosophy, his value system, these things really come forward. And I think that's what makes him probably, for me, the most interesting figure that I've seen yet in football. And when we were concepting this podcast, he was the first guy that came to mind in terms of who I really wanted to speak about.
Yeah, I know. I remember that conversation. And he is fascinating because of his background. You mentioned, you know, his upbringing as well. Like, his brother Rafael and his sister Maria are both active politicians in the Argentinian government at the minute. And he came up in a very well-off family. Rafael, I believe, was part of a guerrilla group. So he's a completely different, fascinating individual to read up about. But, you know, the fact that his upbringing is also really special builds onto what makes him super fascinating as a human being, but also as a coach.
You know, football is how he discovered the world, in a sense. It comes from like a family of lawyers and politicians, and there are streets in Buenos Aires named after his grandfather, I believe. And when he was a kid, he convinced his parents that he studies better when his sister played the piano. So he used to take his sister upstairs to play the piano, tricking his parents into thinking that he was studying. And really, he would sneak out the window and go play football. In a lot of countries, there's a class divide in football. Football is not something that the upper classes engage with. You know, in the United States, it's seen as a middle-class sport because it costs a lot of money to play, pay to play, all these sort of things. But around a lot of the world, football is the game of the masses. But Bielsa went out and played and became obsessed with it. And that's also where he first discovered poverty. I think somebody who grew up in comfortable circumstances the way that he did, you know, in an economic sense, struggled to see how there were people not having the same comforts that he was afforded. And, you know, one of the things that Bielsa has talked a lot about throughout his career is happiness. He has, I think it's like a 5-point system of what brings happiness. And among those things is giving to others, being a person with like a higher value set, whether it's religious or otherwise. And that's come through a lot of times. I mean, the biggest, latest incident, there's two that really stick out in mind. One is the match, I believe it was against...
Yeah, I think it was Aston Villa. This was last season.
Right. And then the second one was also last season, was the Derby incident where he came out and apologized and explained his anxiety, which was also a masterclass of a press conference.
Greatest press conference I think I've ever seen, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's where he basically spoke for an hour and a half talking about his anxieties and insecurities and why he spies on other teams and something he's been done throughout his career. And, you know, there was a subtext there that basically said, me spying on you does nothing. That's not why you're losing games. You're losing games because you're not doing all the hard work that I'm doing. That was the subtext. The actual words were saying, I'm so insecure that I need this to put me at ease, to allow me to sleep at night or whatever it was. And yeah, it was just a masterclass of a press conference.
That quote you were talking about from his brother Rafael, and I think it sort of falls quite nicely into what you're talking about now. The quote is, my family is an unhappy family, and my brother Marcelo is then unhappy. I think that is why we are always seeking for perfection and are ethically inflexible. And that's sort of, like you mentioned, like he's got that 5-step path to happiness. He's morally wants to always strive for perfection. He locks himself in a convent for 3 months to try to find himself and to figure out why he's got himself in the position that he's got. But that press conference that you mentioned where, you know, he sits there for an hour and a half and he talks about all of the things that he knows and his anxiety and why that's why he does what he does. I was reading an article today. Again, it was an article based on Leeds getting promoted, was, and I didn't know this, but Leeds were chasing Marcelo Bielsa for supposedly 2 seasons before they got him. The owners there really wanted him on board and they had to get everything ready for him to actually join. One of the things that Marcelo Bielsa did in his first meeting with them was, when they showed up, he gave them points from every game that they had played the season before. So the 46 games that they'd played before, he gave them a play-by-play and a breakdown of every game and what was wrong with it or what was good about it and so on. And that's just what he is. he's a guy that just sits there and analyzes the game and breaks it down to a point where, you know, he can make sense of it, but then also just sort of stores it in his mind to be able to then relay it onto his players. Look what he's done with some of these players. They haven't heavily invested in like world-class older guys that sometimes these championship sides do to try to get the quality up. He's taken what he's got and he's made them better.
Yeah.
And if that's not the role of a coach or a manager, I don't know what is.
Speaking to the point though about his happiness and focusing on happiness, because, you know, I think the point you made about him being analytical towards football, he's analytical towards every aspect of his life. Mm. And that's one reason why he's been able to cut it down to five, I wouldn't call them necessarily steps, but like tenets of what brings happiness to the common people. Because, you know, somebody who maybe has grown up in an unhappy family is constantly searching for happiness or some sort of fulfillment. There's a funny anecdote when he was coaching a team in South America. They were on a plane and he was sitting next to the famous goalkeeper, José Luis Chilavert. And the plane hit a bit of turbulence and everyone clenched fists a bit and Bielsa panics a bit. And he looks to Chilavert and goes, Chilavert, are you happy? And it's just kind of funny to think that, you know, in these moments when you're maybe considering your last seconds, it's not to say that that was, you know, super drastic, but you're considering those last moments. This is the question that Marcelo Bielsa asks. And Bielsa later came out and admitted that both him and Chilavert are multimillionaires, so they have all the comforts they need in life. You know, it's not to say that that brings happiness, but the base for what happiness can be starts at a different level than those who are impoverished or those who are suffering and struggling in their daily lives. It's just kind of a fascinating look into this guy's mind and what he's thinking about and what he's constantly analyzing. And I think there's one other anecdote that I'll share before maybe we can move on to some other things here. But when he was at Marseille, I think he was quite widely liked at Marseille for a while. And he had a young Benjamin Mendy playing left back. And, you know, Mendy at this time was, I think, about 20 years old and was really on the up and seen to be, you know, a future star for France and for really any team. And Bielsa said to him in front of the team, you can be the best left back in the world. However, you need to ask yourself, do you want to be? You're already a millionaire. You're already rich. If you want to be the best left back in the world, that means sacrificing time with your family, with your friends, partying, living a normal life. You've already got stability. So it's up to you. I can't tell you that this is what I want for you or something like that. You know, most football coaches are so singular in the way they want. There's only winning. Like there's only winning and achieving, and you should want to be the best because that's what it's supposed to be about. But Bielsa has this wider lens. And I think it's not like he's submitting doubt into the mind of Mendy. He's motivating Mendy, but he's also giving it to him in this fully contextual sense. And I think that's something that he also does with his players, is that he doesn't just train them to do well in a certain situation in the game. He makes them completely better players intellectually, technically. You know, he gives them such information and such perspective that they can just be a stronger, not just a player, but a human in a sense. And that humanity lends itself to football for them to be better players as well.
I think that's the sign of look, I mean, the guy is obviously an incredible man manager and an incredible leader. But Benjamin Mendy or Gabriel Batistuta, Pochettino, who, you know, these superstars that Bielsa's managed, they would have grown up with certain managers that would be saying, you've got to push harder. You've got to try this. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. Or you're not trying hard enough. And they'd come at it from a negative perspective. Whereas when you've got a manager coming up to you and saying, look, do you really want to be the best left back in the world? If you do, you've got to do these things. But do you really want to do those things? You could probably do these things that are a lot more fun than what you need to do to be the left back in the world. When someone comes up to you and says that, they automatically, in a way, earn your trust because now you feel more comfortable around them. I think there's another story with Benjamin Mendy where Benjamin Mendy misses a meeting or something.
No, he used to fall asleep in video sessions. And then one day he just wakes up and he also says, okay, good, you're awake. Now we can talk football. And Mendy said it was like, you know, a switch in his head. Wow, if, you know, this guy is being, he's not mad at me. He's being patient for me. And you know, what Bielsa understands as a teacher is that, you know, there's a story from Manchester United where Van Gaal used to send emails attachments and with footage of games and players didn't care, so they wouldn't read it. So he started adding checked receipts to make sure players opened it and watched it. And then he would basically be the schoolmaster who would say, oh, you didn't watch the video. I see, because I have the check receipt list. And Bielsa realizes that, you know, Van Gaal is obviously like a legendary manager in his own, but the, you know, the alternative way here is that Bielsa realizes that to really get the best out of somebody, to really have them fully enthusiastically want to buy into your program, you need that emotional side as well. And, you know, that emotional buy-in, that emotional attachment. And I think that's one reason why almost every player that seems to have played for this guy considers him to be incredible, a genius, the best coach they've had, you know.
His colleagues also talk highly of him and have learned so much from playing with him or having coached against him and having to, you know, use their minds to try to break down his formations and his players' styles and what he gets them to do as well.
Before we move on to legacy, let's talk a little bit about Bielsa and kind of how he's come to be what he is. He was a player for a bit and then never had great success, moved into coaching pretty young, and took over Newell's Old Boys. You know, in Argentina, he's a legend because he took Newell's Old Boys to some great successes. He won the Primera División, and then the next year, they were Copa Libertadores runner-up, which is just incredible at that time for a club of that size. There's a very memorable video of him being hoisted up by the fans. And the reason I want to talk about this, we kind of have a European lens on him now because he's been in Europe for the last 15 years or so. I really think that his early days in South America are important too, because, you know, I saw a tweet today, for example, that said the best manager who's never won a title or something like that. But he's won the Argentinian Primera. He won the Olympics with Argentina. And so these were, you know, these are difficult things to do, especially, you know, in a country that is so, has such a strong football heritage and culture. And in Argentina, there's two pillars of, let's say, football philosophy. There's the Biardo philosophy and the Menotti philosophy. And Menotti is the free-flowing attack, attack, attack. Football is beautiful. Football is joy. And Biardo is more of the football is about structure. It's about discipline. It's about hard work. It's, you know, grinding out victory. It's winning ugly. It's all these sort of things. And Bielsa combined the two in a way where all his players must run. So there's really no room for, I don't want to say there's no room for a number 10, because his teams always tend to have creative players, but the creative players must also work. But they also play very free-flowing, very attacking. They don't sit back. They don't just destroy, destroy, destroy. They all work hard. They work for the team. They play beautiful. It's really fun to watch. In terms of every time that I've seen a Bielsa team play, it's always been a real joy to watch.
I think that's a really good point to transition into the legacy bit, because that playing style and that formation and sort of the effects that he's had on those teams has really sort of translated now with some of the coaches we know and some of the players that we know, sort of, for example, in the Champions League and in the World Cups and so on. And there's a direct link to him. So I think this might be a good time to take a break, and we'll come back and speak legacy.
Sounds good. All right, we're back. You might have heard that we have some new music there. I want to give a shout out to Julian Forte, old-time friend of ours, who is a great musician. Check him out on Spotify. He's at When I Wake. That's three words. Thanks for the music, Julian.
Thank you, Julian. And I'll pick up where we left off before the break about his playing style or his philosophy. I think it's quite well known that Guardiola is a big fan of Bielsa. And I think one of the most important meetings that Guardiola has ever been to was the one with Bielsa. Maybe talk about that, Justin, because I think you know a bit more about that meeting than I do.
When we're talking legacy, what you're talking about is kind of the butterfly effect. I don't think there's anyone in the game today who's had the kind of butterfly effect that Bielsa has had, because he's influenced Pochettino, he's influenced Guardiola, and he's influenced Simeone, who are three of the top, you know, 20 managers in the world over the past 10 years. And I think Simeone and Guardiola are arguably two of the top three managers of the last 10 years. I mean, that alone is incredible in the way that they speak about him. And so when we talk legacy, we want to see who he's impacted. Guardiola obviously being the most prominent one, because Guardiola has spoken about him so much. And when you have Guardiola, who's been influenced by Johan Cruyff, who is arguably the most influential manager in the history of football, at least in terms of the modern shape of football and how it is today, and to have Guardiola speak so prominently about Bielsa, I think that's huge. So the story of Guardiola meeting Bielsa was basically Guardiola was hanging around at AS Roma near the end of his career. and playing with Gabriel Batistuta. And Pep knew at this point that he wanted to become a coach. So Batistuta said, look, Pep, if you want to be a coach, you have to talk to Bielsa. He's the best coach I've ever had. He's the only coach I've ever had who made me a better player, completely understood me, completely got everything. So Guardiola said, okay, he kept that in mind. A few years later, Guardiola ends up in Sinaloa. And Guardiola only went to Sinaloa to play for a guy named Juan Manuel Lillo, who actually was just hired a couple weeks ago as Guardiola's assistant coach for Man City now. So anyways, when Guardiola's there in Sinaloa, a filmmaker decides to set up a meeting between Bielsa and Guardiola. So they go down, they talk about film for an hour, and eventually the filmmaker says, because Bielsa is a huge fan of film, and eventually the filmmaker says, okay, we're not here to talk about film. So Guardiola and Bielsa just went on a huge, long talk about football tactics, every little thing. And, you know, one of the things, you know, this is just kind of like an example, Bielsa doesn't talk to individual journalists because he believes it's unfair. So for example, a journalist once left him a message saying that he wanted to do an interview with him. Bielsa called him to say, hello, sir, I just want to let you know that I cannot be doing this interview because it's not fair. It's not fair for me to give an interview to one person. I can only speak during press conferences because it's more egalitarian. I can speak to everybody. Everybody gets the same information. I can't speak to one person because if I have to speak to you, then I have to speak to everybody. So good day. I just called to let you know that. And until this day, Guardiola does the same thing. You know, he doesn't speak to individual journalists in this way. And that's one of the things he adopted from Bielsa's philosophy. So, you know, I think that's a great example of how Bielsa has impacted modern football.
I mean, you look at the managers that you mentioned, Guardiola, Simeone, Pochettino. I mean, those three have been in the last, I think, three or four Champions League finals. And then if you look at the ripple effect from that, you know, Guardiola working with Mikel Arteta, who's now the manager at Arsenal, who I have no doubt will become a very successful manager moving forward. You know, they all sort of share that same philosophy around press, that high energy, that movement constantly, that free-flowing stuff that, you know, a lot of the world would have seen Guardiola, of course, make that more, I guess, famous. You know, we look at the Spain squad of 2010 and 2012 that had a lot of that influence because of the players from Barcelona. But all of that, you know, you can come back and say, you know, that meeting with Marcelo Bielsa in Argentina and then obviously Cruyff as well, obviously having a huge effect on Guardiola. But to take that and you go ripple, 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 and it just creates this unbelievable, like, net that he's cast around the footballing world. And some of the greatest moments or some of the greatest teams over the past decade and more, whether he was managing them or not, he's got his fingerprint on them.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
I think one of the things that I find most interesting about him is obviously he's a brilliant mind. That's recognized everywhere. And, you know, even though he has had less success than his successors, I want to say, or his, you know, his mentees.
His disciples,
perfect. You know, like Sampaoli followed him in the Chile job and won things. He didn't win anything with Chile, but he convinced them, he changed the culture. And I think that's one of the places where he might have left the strongest legacy. Because what's interesting here is, apart from Newell's and Chile, and then now potentially with Leeds, he hasn't left, let's say, a legacy at an individual club. You know, Marseille will not build a statue out of Bielsa. Lazio, he was there for 2 days. Lille, same thing. You know, Athletic Bilbao, he took them to great heights and played incredible football. And that's kind of when Bielsa entered the Anglophone or the English consciousness because of how comprehensively Bilbao played Manchester United off the park in those Champions League matches. However, you know, he hasn't left behind a litter of trophies. He hasn't left behind all these other things. And I think this is really interesting because we've all been in these conversations where people say all that matters are trophies. At the end of the day, it's about trophies. The greats have trophies. And Bielsa is the contradiction to this. You know, it's almost like he is the key street, the streets will remember guy, because it's like, you know, when you look at trophies, you look at Guardiola, you look at Mourinho, and you look at Alex Ferguson. And then it's like, but all these guys up here, you know, you talk about Guardiola, you talk about Simeone, you're the comedian who makes all the comedians laugh. You're the funniest guy, even though you're not as famous as, let's say, Kevin Hart, but you're the guy who makes Kevin Hart laugh.
That's a great way of describing what he is, because that's basically where he stands within that pantheon from that perspective.
Right. But I also think that one of the reasons why he's so fascinating is his integrity because I think for a lot of the guys at the top, you know, like Guardiola carefully selects his jobs and Bielsa does too. However, Guardiola carefully selects his jobs knowing what he can build and what his success will be, you know? And you can say the same about Mourinho, maybe until recently when his job prospects have narrowed. For a lot of top coaches, it's like they pick carefully their jobs, but Bielsa only goes in when the situation is totally correct for him. And that doesn't mean that he's going to win every game. Like, he'll take challenges and he'll make incredible results. But that's one of the reasons why he hasn't necessarily won big trophies, even though he probably could go on to bigger teams, but that he knows he'll have less control, less power. But because of that, his working conditions won't be correct. For example, if you look right now, and I mean, this is the thing with modern day giant clubs, right? You look at Barcelona, to an extent, Real Madrid, the coach at Barcelona for the last, pretty much since Guardiola, and even Guardiola was only because he came up through the B team, right? The coaches that they have are basically figureheads, representatives. Yeah, they have some tactics, they pick the lineup and whatever, but they're not there to leave a stamp. They're there to fit into the culture. Bielsa is bringing his own culture. He's bringing his own way of doing things. So he can't go to a Barcelona because Barcelona won't accept what he has to bring. He kind of comes with his level of integrity. And if he feels that the integrity has not been upheld, if he feels the agreements are not in place, he'll walk away. You know, he walked away from Lazio after 2 days. It was a surprise when he left Marseille. And it's happened many times before. There have been many times where people were really feared he would walk away from Leeds when something kind of went against him. The brilliant thing about this is, like, most of us in our lives, we have to compromise. So, you know, we haven't reached that level of success. Maybe we also didn't have that level of, let's say, maybe like wealth beforehand as well. You know, we did things that we had to do or that we felt were best for that time. Bielsa's at a stage now, at least, where he doesn't have to compromise anymore. He's comfortable. He's got the multi-millions. He takes it on for the challenge, and he takes it on because the club has sought him out in the right way.
The thing that we see happen so often is that managers will step into a club and they're trying to do what they want to do, but because of all of the systems, the structure, the finances that come into play, they're so rigid, and it's sort of like the coach has to come in as a figurehead and just get points. With Bielsa, it is that. He comes in, he shifts the culture. It's got to change with him. And Leeds is a beautiful example of how he's been able to do that. You know, take them from a mid-table team to now being promoted, potentially champions by the time this pod comes out. And for him to be able to do that just sort of shows the selection process that he goes through to take on the right project. It's got to be able to shift with him. And it's something that I know a lot of coaches would want to do, but even if they tried, they probably wouldn't succeed the way he has.
This is true about most things in life. I think that one thing he's able to recognize is that he knows that these are the conditions, that if these are not in place, he will fail. And the truth is, most managers enter jobs without control. Most managers are walking into helpless situations, you know, because you can't control the finances, you can't control what the board's going to do, you can't control everything around you. And it's a losing job when you start. And honestly, that can be true about life as well. A lot of us take jobs that we need to take. We hope that we'll move up. We hope that we'll get into a better position or that we'll make some money so that we can do something that we want to do down the line. But a lot of the times, we're powerless to control that. And I think what Bielsa's, you know, with his experience and his analytical mind, what he's been able to do is get into a place where he knows what he needs to succeed. He knows that if the club doesn't meet these conditions, if the club doesn't accept the things that he's saying, he will not succeed and no one will be happy. And then what's the point of taking such a job in that place? That's a rare person in the sports world, because a lot of what is happening is ego. A lot of times ex-players will take the biggest job possible as early as possible. There's a sense of ego. It's not about working your way up. I think he's been at the stage where he's beyond that ego. You know, for him, he suffered through that. His failures with Argentina taught him a lot. And I think he's, from there, reflected a lot and realized what he needs to succeed.
I think what we should do is we should get some merch done for this episode. And I think on it should say, what would Bielsa do? Because I think if everyone applied that same thought process to everything they do, I think we may all end up in a happier place.
Or poor.
Or poor. So true. And I think with that, let's move on to the Pantheon. See you on the other side.
All right, let's listen to some more of Julian's beautiful music. And we are back. Here is the Pantheon. So, Hani, today we are going to do, where does Marcelo Bielsa rank in terms of most influential coaches of all time?
Of all time or of the... Yeah, okay, fine. Let's do all time.
I said all time.
All right. Stop yelling at me. Okay, so I think we'll both agree that Cruyff sits as number one. Johan Cruyff. Agreed?
I'll agree to that.
Brilliant. Then we've got a few people that are very close to Cruyff. You know, we've got Michels, a former Dutch manager, who actually had an effect on Cruyff. So we'll go Cruyff. Then you've got Michels and Herrera. I'm going to put Guardiola.
I love that you're just like sweating. You look so uncomfortable.
I know we're going to get into an argument.
You put Guardiola at number four?
Yes. And then I'm going Bielsa.
So Bielsa's five?
Have at me.
What? But why is Guardiola so influential?
Because he has been on top of the world and shown more people what he's done than Bielsa has, even though Bielsa has impacted Guardiola.
Showing people what you've done does not mean that other people are adapting what you do and recreating it.
We're talking about influential though, right? So to have influence, to have influence on the game.
I think you're wrong about Guardiola being more influential than Bielsa because, well, Guardiola kind of brought tiki-taka to, you know, even though he doesn't like that term, to Barcelona, and that was somewhat replicated in Spain. It's not like we've seen a world of teams start playing in this way. Whereas I think with Bielsa, he's influenced Guardiola, Simeone, Pochettino, Sampaoli, and like a dozen other coaches that are pretty prominent. So I think in that sense, Bielsa is way ahead of... I don't think Guardiola's legacy as an influential manager has really taken shape yet. Like maybe once Arteta has a great career, and then maybe once, you know, Xavi or some other players from Pep's early days go into management, maybe we'll start to see a shift in that direction. But I think at the moment, like the only coach that I can think of that has mentioned Pep as having some sort of influence on them is like, well, obviously Arteta, but then maybe like Henri. But
I think what you're taking as influential is like the influence within the footballing world. Whereas I think Guardiola has influenced, I mean, how many park football teams or Sunday league football teams that will...
What Sunday football teams do you play for? I mean, to find those teams.
I know, right? I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at this quite like tunnel vision, but I feel like a lot of teams look at... No one sits there and goes, we're going to play like Mourinho, even on an amateur level, right? Like, we're going to park the bus and we're just going to counterattack.
I'm giving you a really weird eyebrow right now because I know a lot of teams that... Keep in mind, I lived in Milan. I interviewed Carlo Rivetti, who's the CEO of the brand Stone Island, which is Pep's favorite brand, by the way. And when I asked him, well, you know, what's his team? He's an Inter fan, and he stood up and saluted Mourinho. And when I played for Milan, my coach was also an Interista, and he used to always say things like, look, I'm not Mourinho. However, I think blah, 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 blah. Trust me, he was definitely not Mourinho for a lot of reasons. But we can't take like this little, I don't know, bubble. Bielsa is legendary in Argentina, definitely for Newell's, but also, you know, the fact that he's known throughout Argentina as being a genius. Legendary in Chile, to the point that if there's a statue of Bielsa one day in Chile, I wouldn't be surprised. He's now a legend at Leeds, but it's not just that. It's that he's shaped big forces. The only reason that Guardiola today might be quoted on Sunday league teams, and I'd like to see evidence of this, because if there are teams out there who are playing this, my number is... And I want them to call me to come play for those teams because I would love to play tiki-taka style football. But I don't think he's as influential yet as Bielsa has been.
Look, I'm sorry. I'm just not going to budge on my opinion.
Okay, well, we'll just leave it at that and agree that you're wrong. So
No. Okay, look, here's my counterpoint. Guardiola has been able to take that style of play and make it readily available to the average football fan. Simeone, Pochettino, although have been influenced by Bielsa, don't use the same style of play and the same formation that Bielsa does. Yes, there are elements of what they do that is similar, And same with Guardiola. Like, there's elements of his game that are similar to Bielsa's style and philosophy.
It's not just elements. It's a similar philosophy. It's that high press. Maybe they don't play the same formation, but it is a high press.
Sure.
Constant running. It's the same core value set that they've adopted. And even Guardiola does that. Just because a team likes to play passing football doesn't mean that that comes from Guardiola. You know what I mean? Because the thing is Guardiola's style is very calculated. It's very much like drawing grids on a field. Bielsa's is interchangeable positions, which not every top club necessarily does. But the things that Simeone and Pochettino took from Bielsa is that hard running, hard work. And you see that with Pep as well. Like, that's the common thread through them, with Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, still pressing, still playing defense, still filling spaces, still kind of not necessarily sacrificing themselves for the team, but getting the best out of themselves while running hard and not being kind of the enigmatic, creative, moody number 10 that we all love and miss. But you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean. I think the point that I'm trying to make is that Guardiola has been able to take this and made it more globalized. And so therefore, I think he's more influential than Bielsa does, even though Bielsa is a key element of that. It's that Guardiola has been able to, I guess, McDonald's it, if that's a term. What's the term I'm looking for? Like Big Mac it, something, whatever that is, where, you know, he's been able to take this idea and has spread it over the world because of the way his Barcelona team was playing, because of the way his Bayern Munich team was playing, the way that Manchester City is playing in the Premier League now. I think he's more influential because he's had more influence on your average football fan, your average player out on a Sunday. You know, maybe the teams don't necessarily try to play like Guardiola's teams, but if you go to the average football fan and talk about Guardiola's style, they can describe that to you. They can't describe Bielsa's. I'm putting him in number 5 because of that reason. And I'd also debate that Mourinho probably should be sitting in front of him because, again, more globalized, Big Mac style. But I think if you're drawing up a list, that's where he would sit.
See, I'll disagree there because I think notoriety in the sense that just because they're known by more people does not make them more influential. If a judge makes a decision on a law and that law becomes known across the country, but people don't know the name of the judge, it doesn't make the judge less influential than, let's say, the president, who everybody knows.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And so in this sense, the average person can describe Guardiola's style of play, or, you know, maybe not in great detail, but maybe give like an overtones. But I don't think that necessarily means that he's influenced more people or more coaches or more players than Bielsa has. And so in that sense, I think
where would you put him?
With you. Well, I agree with you. Cruyff is probably number one. And then, I mean, because here's the thing that's tough, is that Bielsa's legacy is not over yet. He's still going, you know, like, and he's not even that old. Is. You know, he's not Roy Hodgson. Like, he's relatively, you know, he's in his...
He was born in 55. So what's that? Yes, mid-60s, yeah.
He's still got, you know, time left to influence the game. And, you know, a lot of times we don't see the legacy until there's been some distance between them.
Sure.
I want to put him second. You know, Herrera was a huge influence. And then there's a number of coaches, you know, through the years, the Eastern Bloc coaches, you know, the guys who came up with the WM formation. But I think in the sense of that, if you look at how far Bielsa's influence reaches, but this is a guy who has not always reached top success and still influenced the top coach. Who else has influenced the top coaches in the world the way that he has? All time, I'm going to put him around 2 at the moment. Let's wait 20 years and see kind of what he leaves behind and how he's remembered.
All right, put yourself out there. Do you think he could be more influential than Johan Cruyff?
I don't think so. Well, he could be. He could be, potentially. I think it's difficult because we're in a different world now, how big football is in terms of size and economic power. The thing is, I think Cruyff came along at the right time for Ajax and Barcelona, as well as the Dutch national team, to influence all three to have an identity that they have today, even though Barcelona is really struggling at this very moment. You know, not just in terms of results, but in terms of identity and who they are and how they're playing and everything like that.
And as an organization.
It's going to be really difficult for Bielsa to reach that, because here's the thing. Ajax is the biggest team in the Netherlands and one of the top teams in Europe. Barcelona is same in Spain, top two, you know, probably second biggest club after Real Madrid in some ways, and one of Europe's top 3 to 5 clubs. The effect he's had on Argentina is there. It's not as big as Cruyff's is on the Netherlands. The effect he has on Chile is there. So if Chile continues, I think they didn't make the last World Cup, did they? But before that, they had unprecedented success. If that proves to be a one-off and they continue to take the principles Bielsa instilled in them, and if when he leaves Leeds, if they're in a position to continue to grow and somehow become a power in England and in Europe, which, again, the economics today is so different and it's so difficult to overcome that I don't think that's necessarily a possibility, even with somebody as brilliant as Bielsa. But if that were to happen, I think he's in with a shout.
And I'll be really interested to see how that unfolds. Honestly, I really would. But he's going to have to sit in my top five slot, unfortunately.
I'm fine with that.
I think it's a good point in the pod to say as well, like, our knowledge of the game is still growing. And we're obviously, you know, limited by what we know. And these conversations, like, we try very hard not to sit here and, like, look up Wikipedia and have research books open to discuss this. Like, a lot of this is our knowledge, and our knowledge is not infinite. Well, in the meantime, I think if you disagree with Justin, who has put Bielsa in at second, or disagree with me, I've put him in at number 5, tweet at us at This Is Hanny Jabber and at Justin Salhani. Make sure you subscribe and rate, review the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And we'll be back next week with another footballing personality to be talking about.
Sounds good.
Thanks for your time, Justin. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, I would say the same, but I hate you.
Love you too. Bye.